long ago, we used to sit for 3 months at a time. So for generally 13 days, you would do your 10 hours, and then you would have a day you would just do 4 hours, and then again 14 days, 10 hours, for 3 months. And so I was doing one of these, and I was really enthusiastic. So immediately I went into the schedule is 10 hours, but I am going to do more. So I went into doing 14 hours. Even when people were not sitting, I was there sitting. And those days, I was the practice I learned in Korea was just to ask a question. What is this? So I questioning. So really, lots of enthusiasm, really intense practice, and nothing was happening. But really nothing, day after day. And you know, it lasted for 2 weeks. That for 2 weeks, I tried really hard. And in a way, you could say there was lots of efforting, definitely, but there was no effect whatsoever. And then one day, we were listening, because there was not a regular teacher, so we were just listening to a tape and the talk of a Zen master. And then he said something in the talk about the questioning meditation, which really kind of was like, ah. And then suddenly, the practice became so easy, like nearly it was happening by itself. So then the question could be, was it a waste of time to sit so hard for 2 weeks? Or was it because I tried so hard for 2 weeks that I really heard what he said and then something happened? And so this is really tricky. The correspondence, you know, it's back to the correlation or causation. You know, is it because of the efforting that I have the effect? Is it regardless of the efforting I have the effect? Because what is interesting often is when the effect happens, it feels like you're not doing anything. Like, you know, you were trying hard, but you are really the feeling, I am doing something. But when something happens, often in meditation, it's like, oh, it just seemed like I am not doing it, it is happening. So it's interesting, this kind of like, things, because you never know. Is it because you tried hard? Is it because you stopped trying hard? Is it because all of these together? So I think when we look at effortless effort, this is an interesting one also to look at. And at times, we might try hard, because at that moment, we really inspire to try it that way. But it doesn't mean that trying hard is not effortless effort, it's just intense effort. I think it's, again, how do we do it? What kind of kindness, warmth, interest we bring to it? So I think there is different aspect to that effortless effort. And in a way, it doesn't mean not doing anything. I think this is what is interesting with effortless effort. You do something, but how do you do it? And so what I like to talk about this afternoon is actually there you find that in the early text, in the early tradition, and which is very much part of what is considered like the basic building block of the teaching of the Buddha, the teaching of Buddhist meditation, which is the Eightfold Path. And within that, those eight branches, one of the branch is appropriate effort. So in a way, already there, as I mentioned previously, the Buddha is considering what is appropriate effort. What does it mean to make an effort in a skillful way? And then here, he posits basically a relationship between efforts and conditions. And that's what I find kind of useful also to look at in terms of condition, effort. So I will tell you about the four, because it's a four great efforts, four appropriate efforts. The first one is sustain, through appropriate effort, sustain positive state, mental state, emotional state, physical state, whatever state, sustain positive state, beneficial state, while they are happening. That's one effort. Another one is cultivate appropriate effort in terms of preparing the conditions so that positive beneficial state are more likely to arise. So it's kind of like preparation. You could call it creative preparation. Third one, with appropriate effort, let go of condition, let go of a difficult state once it has arisen. And the fourth one, again, preparation, how can you cultivate an appropriate effort which will make it so negative states are less likely to arise? So then it's kind of like connecting effort with conditions. The first one actually is very interesting in terms of effortless effort, because the first one is saying, while you're experiencing a beneficial state, that it be a wise state, a loving state, a compassionate state, a happy state, or peaceful state, whatever state it is, a healthy state, how can you sustain it? And actually, the way to sustain it is just to be mindful of it. That is a very interesting one, because often we would think we would have to make effort to make it deeper, longer, etc. And actually, as soon as we bring effort to a positive state, oh, this is, I'm peaceful, isn't it fantastic? I want to be more peaceful. Oh, I have this great insight, this is fantastic, I want to have more of that. And generally it goes. This is interesting. Like sometime when we sit in meditation, you might experience what I would call a quiet and clear state. Suddenly, by itself, we seem to be really quiet and clear. And then generally, one of our first reaction is, oh, how can I deepen this? How can I have more of this? Or how can it get me enlightenment? That's another story. And generally it goes. The quietness and clarity, poof, gone. But actually, if you're just with the state, like just mindful, experiencing the state, actually the state lasts longer. That is interesting. And I think it's the same in daily life. When suddenly you're peaceful or aware or kind, and the fact that you are aware of it in this caring way, in this mindful way, I think two things happen. One thing is you become more confident that I can experience this. I am experiencing it. This is happening. It's not abstract. In the experience, I am experiencing this. And not doing anything with it, but just accompanying it, a lot of the time make it last longer. Just by being mindful of it. It's very interesting to notice that. Because often that's back to the baseline, back to the perfection. If the baseline of expectation, we could say, is high, okay, I am peaceful, but it's peaceful number three. I mean, you know, this is minor stuff, you know. I mean, I need to be peaceful number seven, and then, yes, yes, that's real stuff, yeah, yeah. Then, but if you're mindful, that quite a lot of the time you might be peaceful number three. Well, that's kind of nice. And accompany it. Be curious. how long is this going to last? Because that too is impermanent. But if we're accompanying it with, I feel peaceful now. That's nice. Can I And it's interesting that sustaining. Actually, the sustaining does not require us to do anything. It only requires us to be mindful in a caring way, and just in a way to accompany the state, to recognize, oh yeah, I am experiencing this. So I think this actually is a very easy thing to do in terms of the great appropriate effort. That one, in a way you don't have to do anything apart from being mindful of it. In a way, what he's asking of you is not to make it into abstraction. I think this is what the mindfulness really a lot of the time asks us of, is not to go into the commenting of it or not the comparing of it. Oh, I am peaceful now, but yesterday I was so much more peaceful, or yesterday I was so much less peaceful. I mean, it might happen again that I won't be peaceful again. Ooh, it's going to go. He said, oh, it's okay now. Let's see how long this lasts. To me, that's one thing which is interesting. You know, I feel good. How long is this going to last? I have no idea. So just to be aware of it, to accompany it. Then you have the next one. And the next one is before the positive beneficial state happens. Can you cultivate condition in such a way it's more likely to happen? And basically, I think that's what meditation is about. Meditation is really partly about that. Cultivating conditions, inner conditions, relationship to outer conditions, so that more likely there might be peace, or there might be kindness, or there might be compassion. And how does it work? I think it works basically with what we do. The anchoring and the looking deeply. I think that has an effect where it helps us to be more calm and clear, more stable and open. And so it's kind of not an immediate effect, but it's an effect over time. Like at the moment, I am teaching for a research project. And I was asked to create partly a manual for teaching meditation to people over 65 who had never meditated before. And so I thought, you know, generally people, when they come to a day like this or they come to a class, I mean, they're interested in it. You know, they have some interest toward the thing. Here, it was like, you know, they must be in this group because they have never done meditation. If they have done too much yoga, they can't be in it. If they've done too much meditation, no way, they can't join us. So we really wanted people who were real, real beginners, who had never done anything. And we thought, how are we going to, you know, encourage them? You know, how is it going to work out? That, you know, they want to do it, and they're going to do it for 18 months. At least 20 minutes a day, and once a week, at least 40 minutes with us. And I was so amazed every time. They're so keen. And also, they benefit so much from it. I'm kind of surprised. I know this works, but, you know, this kind of really confirms it in a way. But it's interesting how each of them, according to condition, it will help them in different ways. So in a way, the meditation, the fact of just being aware, cultivating the anchoring, the experience of change, makes them experience positive state. And in a way, the only thing they have to do to more likely to have those states is to meditate, actually, the way they can, the way it works for them. And for each of them, it's quite different. So to me, this is interesting in that one, cultivating the condition so it's more likely, is kind of looking. How does it help me? If I do the anchoring in the breath, how does it help me? If I am mindful when I eat my apple, how is it helpful? And I think it's kind of noticing, not what I would call the big effect, but the small effect of stability, openness, creativity, peacefulness, time to time. Again, this is very much based on condition. So certain meditation can help toward this experiencing of benefit state. Like one person, I mean, they surprise us because they really don't know anything about meditation. And we try not to make them have ideas too much about it. So very simple. And then when somebody who swims every day said, well, suddenly I was so aware of my body, the whole of it, and I was not thinking about something else. Or somebody said, well, I am not so impulsive anymore. I listen to people more. It's very interesting to see how just doing the meditation seems to have this effect of beneficial state of a different nature. So in a way, again, for us, this is back to for us to notice that. And also notice, do we have a certain expectation? And then we think, well, this is not bad, but I want that. Sometimes this is a little the trickiness, is that you have like a benchmark. Oh yeah, I'm feeling a little better. Yeah, that's not bad, but I want that. So I think this appropriate effort is about, again, recognition. That what I do actually has a certain effect to a certain degree. And just to notice, if I do it, it is helpful. Because in a way, that's going to help you to do more of it. Then you have the next one. And the next one is let go. So the appropriate effort, let go of a negative state once it has happened. And that's really tricky. I mean, all of us know that. You know, we have all good intention, and we have the intention to be kind, to be patient, to be et cetera, et cetera. Everybody has different ideas. And then suddenly, we find ourselves irritable, impatient, unkind, et cetera, et cetera. And then here it is saying, in a way, can you let go of that? And actually, that letting go of the negative state, I would say that is the hardest thing. That really is the hardest thing, because I think we have to be careful of often seeing letting go as poof, chopping off. Like something is happening, poof. Either I have to cut it off, either I should be able to cut it off. I should be able to stop it. This is interesting about that one. And sometimes we can let go. I mean, sometimes just the seeing of it allows the let go to happen. But a lot of the time, not. So I think in terms of the letting go, it's interesting to, I see four types of letting go. So I think what is important to see that the letting go can have many different shapes and not just that getting rid of shape. So I would say the first letting go is actually you go through the thing, condition arise, you are upset, you are in the middle of really stuck in the upsetness, and then at some point it stops because that stops too. And then you see, I was really upset, really upset. And to me, this is a letting go. Because often, what we do is we think, I had the right to be upset. This is my right to be upset, you know? I had good reason to be upset. And so in a way, we kind of like not letting it go. we're kind of grasping at it, which often make it continue more, and there is more repetition to it. But if we can notice, like, oh, I was upset, and now I am not upset anymore. To me, this is an interesting one, because sometimes it takes time to see that you've gone into a loop. Sometimes there is really the energy of it before you can, oh, that has happened. Some time ago, I was really busy and had this plan. I need to go to town because I live in a little village in the countryside. I need to go to town and I have this to do, that to do, that to do, that to do. So, you know, 1 week I can't, second week I can't, finally the third week, a day I can go to town. So off I go to town. And then suddenly first I go into the apple shop, and then I'm like a dervish in that apple shop. And then I come out of the apple shop and I think, uh-oh. If this guy had known that I'm a meditation teacher, they would have really been surprised. And then I saw all the kind of that busyness that was producing that effect, which, you know, I am busy, I have to do fast, and then generally you take, you're less careful with people and impatient, a little, you know, not so kind. And I thought, okay. So while I was doing it, I could not stop it. I had to see it first. And then when I went out, I thought, okay. Now we're going to do this at a measured pace. And then immediately, then you could have the kindness, you could have the attention. So sometimes the letting go is in seeing, oh, this has happened. What can I learn from it? How can I move from there? Then in a way, the second letting go is when you, in a way, you're in the middle of it. So you suddenly see yourself being impatient or angry or anxious, and you can't do anything about it. This, I think, is the most frustrating stage, actually. Because you, before, at least you could enjoy being irritable or anxious or whatever. You could enjoy it, you know. But now you can't really enjoy it because I'm experiencing this. This is unpleasant. This is not fun. And I'm partly responsible for it. It was interesting, again, this beginning of the year. I was, for a month, I was quite ill, actually. But there were 3 days where I could not sleep. I had this pain in the back. And I mean, you know, when you have lots of pain in the back and you can't lie down, and then, you know, it was kind of, I did not know really why. And so the first night, I was totally in it. You know, this is terrible. And Stephen is not here, and I have to this to do, that to do, and, you know, like, shh. And then the second night, again, lots of pain in the back. And then I think, okay, what can you do with this, with the help of the meditation? And then immediately, there was no amplification. So I think this is a thing to see it when you are in the middle of it. It's not going to stop the fact that you are in pain, which makes you a little stressed and things like that. But what it will help you to do this let go, seeing it as it's going on, is that you're not going to amplify. You're not going to proliferate with it. And so I had a much better night, just being, okay, go back to the breath, go back to the breath, and just in a way using the meditation, not to amplify, not to proliferate. So it's also interesting in terms of the mindfulness to see when we are in the middle of an unpleasant state, it's not necessarily going to stop the unpleasantness because diverse conditions are creating this unpleasantness. But it can help us not to amplify it. Then you have, I would say, the third letting go of negative state is when you start to look at the conditions of them. The fact that actually, and this kind of, in a way, leads us to the fourth one. The fourth effort is, how can I prevent negative state arising before they have arisen? So it's basically about preparation. And I think this is a letting go, when you start to see that things happen because of condition. I think the great insight of the Buddha was about conditions, inner conditions, outer conditions. And so to see that things come upon condition, there can be some repetition, there can be some surprising condition. And so in a way to see, when I experience a negative state, is it a new negative state I have never experienced before? Or is it a repetitive one which I'm starting to know? Like a few years back, I was traveling abroad and I had not slept at night and we were changing airport and it was kind of a little crazy. And so in the middle of this kind of rushing, looking for the gates and everything, suddenly I really feel weird. And I start to speak in an extremely strange voice. My husband looked at me like, what's going on? And I'm thinking, this is weird. Like I'm talking in a voice I have never spoken before like that. Very strange. So I'm kind of, I'm feeling kind of like stressed out and my voice is weird. And then finally somebody indicates the right gate and then we saved and he goes. And then in another situation similar, he comes again, but this time I know it. So I say, okay, back to the breath, back to the breath. And then recently it happened again a few weeks back. You know, my friend left our car in the car park in the airport. And then at 9 o'clock at night, I'm supposed to find the car at such and such place. And it's not there. I look around, it's not there. And then just at that moment, my husband out phoned me. And I suddenly had this weird voice. And he's kind of start to get really worried. And I hear the voice, and I think, ooh, I'm going into the state. So I said, calm down, calm down. And I found the car finally. But it's just to show that actually it's not about not experiencing the state, but can we recognize a condition? Because if we think, this is terrible, I'm always like this, this should not happen, I should be better than this, or whatever it is we can think when we experience a negative state. If we realize, hey, I recognize this, or this is new, what is going on? So the mindfulness is not stopping experience, but it's kind of in a way creatively engaging with the experience. What are the conditions which are more likely to make this happen than not to make it happen? So kind of, in a way, it's kind of like what I call at the beginning, seeing what are the conditions and trying to creatively engage with it. And then the thing is less likely either to happen or to amplify. And then the fourth letting go, I think, is about before you do it, before you go into the negative state, having the space, not at time, to question it, to question one's reaction. Because in a way, we're so used to react automatically. Impatience, anxiety, or whatever, confusion, or thing like that. And so it's kind of like, do I need to necessarily act in that way? Because often it's because we are hurt or because we are confused. And when we hurt or confused or then we react in this kind of, like I would call, a survival mode, which might not be so helpful anymore, although it could have had some function in the past. And so now I see the mindfulness in terms of the fourth effort. How can I creatively engage in negative situation so that I might not necessarily react in the same way? But can I have a creative response? One could say a newer response, a different response. And so in a way there we need, in a way, that's what I think the meditation is about, is actually to help us to, over time, I see the, so you have the effort, then the appropriate effort, and then you have the effect of that. And personally, I would see two effects. One effect is like what I would call the happening by itself effect, which is suddenly something open, or you experience something and it seems to happen by itself. But I think there is another effect which is more over time, that when we're doing the sitting, the walking, we are building the ground. In a way, we are kind of working on cultivating stability, cultivating spaciousness, cultivating openness. So that then, at those times, we might be more likely to have a creative response than an automatic response. Because I think this is what is interesting. In terms of that, you could say prevention. Of course, we at times will experience unpleasant state, unbeneficial state. So I think we have to accept that it will be so. And at the same time, some, we can really creatively engage with them to such a thing that they disappear. I have experienced that. And I think you can have two effects. One effect can be that the automatic reaction just disappears by you really understanding it, experiencing it, having an insight into it, having developed more groundedness and openness. But there is another aspect of that prevention. It's not that the thing does not happen, but the thing will last less long and be less intense. And I think that we should also consider that in terms of appropriate effort. That this is not a path of eradication. That not necessarily all the bad things are going to disappear. That I don't think this is what it's about. But it's kind of, in a way, how can I cultivate the beneficial things, and how can I creatively engage when the difficult things happen? Or how can I help myself that possibly there can be less of them? Or there could be less reaction to them. So that's what I wanted to talk about. And then I wanted to, this afternoon, in terms of the meditation, look at first what we are talking in terms of efforting about the loving kindness meditation. So I'm not sure if all of you are familiar with it. Some maybe not, some maybe yes. So this is a different type of meditation, we could say. And often it's referred to as metta meditation, M-E-T-T-A. And so the way you still have the anchoring and what I would call the experiential inquiry, but in a different way. So you have three phrases you generally use in English, if you're English speaking, or other language, if your native language is another one. And so you use this sentence as an anchor. So you come back to the sentences. So the sentences are, may I be happy, may I be at peace, may I be safe. So in a way, we start by ourselves, just reciting silently, inwardly, the sentences. May I be happy, may I be at peace, may I be safe. And then the idea is to expand it. So then you go to people in the room. So you take one person, either through the face or through the name if you know him. And then may you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be safe. And then generally you go to everything that is alive outside this room, again taking them in turn. May you be happy. That it be the tree, the bird, the people. May you be happy. May you be at peace. May you be safe. And then you go to the category of people you like, who support you. Then to the category of people you're a little indifferent or neutral toward. And then you go to the category of people you have a little difficulty with. Not the most difficulty with. Please, please. Because generally, I don't know why, but people bring kind of a Pol Pot or Hitler, and that's not a good idea. So somebody you have a little difficulty with. Once I was in France, and I thought, oh, maybe we could try Sarkozy, and they were all like that. So I said, okay. You know, a little difficulty with, not a big one. So we can anchor in a good way. And then you can finish, may all beings. And I would say, I would recommend three ways to do this practice. So for some people, to repeat the sentences really works well. So you just repeat the sentences silently, and it really works well. For some others, it doesn't work, because it feels a little artificial to repeat sentences, or because they use sentences, it seems to lead to proliferation of thought. So then I would recommend there to connect either to the experience. Can I experience some happiness now? Can I share it with others? Am I prepared to share it with others? Can I experience some peace? Am I prepared? Can I share it with others? Can I experience some safety? Can I share it with others? Or you can connect to the quality. How does it feel when I am happy? How does it feel when I'm at peace? How does it feel when I feel safe? Can I share this with others? So again, as with any practice, to just kind of see kind of how does it work or not? Because I think part of the effort in a way is in looking at two things. Because sometimes you think the breath, it's a sacred object, I must be able to meditate on the breath. Because my teacher said so, everybody said so, I must do the breath, no matter what. But sometimes it really doesn't suit some people. Same with loving kindness, same with anything. So then, sometimes you wonder, is efforting, no matter what, I do this, or is actually the appropriate effort in finding an anchor that works well for us. And personally, I would go for that. That is not regardless of my condition, but considering my condition, what seems to work? What seems to help me to be stable, to be open, to be quiet, to be clear? I think that's what is important, not the specific anchor. So that's what I was suggesting we do. So let's do it. Or is there any question or comments at this point, or shall we do it? Okay, so let's do it.